What up, what up? Preseason podcast of the year returns. Jay Hicks here behind the mic, per usual. Glad you all could be with us today. It's been a little bit. It's been a couple of weeks. I threw the two podcasts at you in the same week, you know, a little while back. I figured I'd let them simmer for a little bit. But a lot has happened in the world of sports and hip-hop, so it kind of felt appropriate to get back behind the mic today. I'm in a different part of the crib right now. I don't know if it sounds any different or not. We'll see later on. But my lady, she needed to study in a certain area, so I didn't want to try to distract her too much. So hopefully I'm not distracting her too much, even though she can probably hear me anyway. Hopefully not. But, you know, we're just going to roll with the punches, and we'll see what happens with that. She may come out here and cuss me out. I don't know. I could try to front on y'all like the crib is so big that she could never, ever hear me. Echo, echo, echo. Like, my crib is that big, but it's not. You know what I'm saying? I ain't gonna front on y'all like that. I'm too loyal to y'all. I'm too honest with y'all to do something like that. So, I'm not. But I do want to talk to you guys a little bit about what's been in the news lately. Because, like I said, there's a lot going on, man. And it kind of sucks, actually. It kind of sucks because this... Everything... The theme of tonight's edition of the podcast, and we're recording this on Tuesday evening, late Tuesday night, actually, December 9th, 2014... The theme of the HHSR podcast today is conflict. Conflict. Butting heads. Fussing and feuding. All that stuff. Throwing hands. Literally. All of it. We've seen a lot of it lately. We'll touch on that. And we've seen it in various arenas. Yeah, man, I don't know what to make of it. Like, I thought this is like Christmas time, right? Like, I thought this was supposed to be a joyous time of year, but not so much. But again, this is the Dolo edition, I should point out, of the HHSR podcast, preseason podcast of the year. No guests this evening. It's just me spitting off the dome with a couple topics I wanted to touch on. First of all, the one-year anniversary of the preseason podcast of the year just passed, y'all. How about that? 1 year. Can you believe it's already been a year of me doing this? I can't even believe it myself. I've had a lot of fun doing it, that's for sure. And it's been everything that I ever would have hoped it would be. No, in all seriousness, though, it's been dope, man. It's been dope doing the podcast thing. Been in discussions about expanding it even further, trying to get the podcast on more mediums, and then also maybe going video with it, so we'll see. Maybe not necessarily with the podcast itself, but maybe just adding a visual element to the hiphopsportsreport.com, because I am incredibly handsome and you guys just don't know that right now. So you know, we may go that route, but we'll see, time will tell. But yeah, the 1 year anniversary, it was actually November 23rd of 2013 was when we recorded the very first HHSR podcast, and that actually was 3 days after our most recent one, which was the 20th, and so we didn't get to mention it on that one, so I figured I'd shout us out on our own podcast, because that's what we're doing. If you like the podcast, or, you know, if you listen to the podcast regularly, thank you so much, and thank you for keep giving me the motivation to get up and do this all the time. We put out, like, I don't know, I think this is like maybe the 25th edition of the podcast, 26, something like that. It's hard to believe it's been that many, man. So like I said, thank you for anybody that's listened once. If you've spent just a second of your day listening to me ramble about sports and music, I'm incredibly grateful, because this is what I love to do most, and I feel like I'm pretty good at it. But you know, only time will tell as far as that's concerned. But what following I do have at this point, you know, I'm very much appreciative, and thank you so much a thousand times over. You guys mean the world to me. Some of you guys are friends and family. Some of you guys are complete strangers, or people that I just didn't even know were listening to it, but are listening to it. Regardless of who you are, thank you. Thank you, thank you. But yeah, so I mean, I'm in a good spirit. I'm in a good space because of this, right? But again, conflict. Conflict all around me. All around all of us. That's kind of been a theme. So we're gonna look at a few different things here that have kind of popped up in the news recently. I'm actually going to start with college football, and we all love college football, right? I mean, who doesn't love college football? The playoff, we have a college football playoff. It was a four-team system to start off with, and it was interesting. The first go-around, to say the least, how they came to the conclusions that the committee came to. And let me first, before I jump into that, hiphopsportsreport.com is the website. Please look us up and check out all of our articles there on sports and hip-hop music. Please go to twitter.com/HHSReport and follow and support and yell at me and tell me that I'm an idiot based on all my ridiculous opinions, whatever it is that you want to do. I'm down for it. I'm always up for a good debate. And I will embarrass you on Twitter and basically tell you why you're wrong. But nevertheless, I'd appreciate it. And also, we're on Facebook as well, facebook.com/HHSReport. Same thing. And then also, you can find the podcast on iTunes. So you can either go to the website directly or go to iTunes and look up the podcast there. And by all means, rate and subscribe. So, but yeah, getting back to college football, man. The committee, they were making a four-team playoff. And I got to say, y'all, I think they got it right. I think they got the four-team playoff right. I mean, I said it right after the conference tournament games on Twitter, right after they ended. There were four teams that in my opinion, were a notch above the rest. That was Alabama, Oregon, Florida State, Ohio State. Those were the four teams that I had. I had them in a different order than the committee, but that's the order the committee came out with. Alabama 1, Oregon 2, Florida State 3, and Ohio State 4. Couple things. First of all, Baylor got hosed in their eyes, and TCU got hosed in their eyes. And they both have a legitimate beef, I will say that. Baylor, of course, defeated TCU at Baylor in the middle of the season. I think it was 61-58 in a game that set defensive football back to the Stone Age, right? And then TCU actually, despite that loss, worked their way all the way up to third in the most recent college football playoff rankings, the official playoff rankings, which were, I believe, 5 days before the conference championship game. So it was like that Monday or Tuesday of not this week, but the prior week is when TCU was ranked third. So we're just talking like literally 7 days ago. TCU was the third ranked team in the country. They go out and play Iowa State and win like 55-3 or something ridiculous like that. And they drop three spots from third all the way to sixth and out of the playoff picture. They got a legitimate beef for that. The Baylor Bears, on the other hand, they went ahead and defeated Kansas State. And Kansas State is a pretty good football team. I've seen Kansas State play this year. They're pretty good, y'all. And Baylor, you know, it wasn't a blowout victory or anything like that. But, I mean, they beat them. They beat them. It was a home game. And they beat them, I think, I don't know, it was like 35-24, something like that. And so it was a nice win for Baylor because it was a win against a quality opponent, which quality opponents had been scarce on Baylor's resume. And with the exception of TCU. And so Baylor had the one loss to West Virginia, but West Virginia is not a terrible program, so that's not the worst loss in the world. But because of the fact that the committee was supposedly putting all this emphasis on the head-to-head matchups and that Baylor actually defeated TCU head-to-head, Baylor felt like they had a legitimate beef because they were below TCU in last week's rankings. So now here we are. How did Ohio State go from 5 up to 4? And how did TCU fall from 3 to 6? And how come Baylor never got to sniff it? Well, I think Ohio State's better than Baylor and TCU, first of all. And I think the way Ohio State dismantled Wisconsin, I mean, they beat Wisconsin so bad, I'm not even going to play the much defecation drop that I've been prone to do in situations like this. I'm not even going to do that. That's how bad Ohio State beat the brakes off Wisconsin. You know what I'm saying? I believe the final score of that game was 59-0, and that was with Ohio State's third-string quarterback on a neutral field. Shout out to Cardale Jones and the Glenville Tar Blooders. It was on a neutral field, and they beat them 59-0. That's how you jump up from 4-3. It's got nothing to do with what TCU or Baylor did or didn't do, but it had to do with what Ohio State did. And what Ohio State did was separate themselves from the pack down the stretch, and that's just like the great racehorse, and you know, you're watching the Kentucky Derby or something like that, and down the stretch they come, right? And that one horse that's got a little bit left in the tank, they tend to pull away on those last few lengths there, and that's basically what Ohio State did. They gunned it, they gunned it, and they destroyed Wisconsin. And Wisconsin's not a bad team either. Wisconsin was ranked 13th in the country. The Buckeyes then had wins over Wisconsin, Minnesota, who was ranked at the time, on the road, Wisconsin on a neutral field, and Michigan State, who was a top 10 team, on the road. Those are three excellent wins. Say what you will about the Big Ten, those are three pretty damn good wins. Baylor didn't beat anybody outside of TCU. Baylor's schedule was weak, and TCU and Kansas State, because like I said, I think Kansas State is good. But I think it was kind of a too little, too late situation for them. Plus, Baylor won both of those games at home. Their non-conference schedule was so garbage that I saw their coach, Art Briles, on television trying to sell America on them going to Buffalo and winning at Buffalo. Like, Buffalo's a Mac school, man. I'm a Mac, product of the Mac myself, but come on, man. Really? Like, Buffalo? Like, that's your signature road win is Buffalo? That's not going to cut it if you're trying to contend for a national championship. So I have no sympathy for Baylor not being in the mix. Initially, I thought TCU should have been ahead of Baylor. I think I would flip-flop that. I think maybe Baylor probably should have been fifth and TCU sixth, even though I understand why TCU was ahead of them. And I think TCU is probably better than Baylor, despite the fact that Baylor beat them. I just think that Baylor deserved it based on that head-to-head matchup, regardless of what time in the year that took place. Nevertheless, TCU didn't make it in either, and they ended up going up against Iowa State, who had two wins on the last weekend of the college football season. So you always want to make an impression when you leave out. You know, you always want to leave whoever it is that's judging you, if it's a job interview or if it's a date or whatever it is that you're doing in life, you want to make sure that you leave that person with a positive impression. And not that they didn't, because they did their job. They destroyed a terrible team. The problem is that they played a terrible team while all these other teams are playing ranked opponents. Florida State's playing Georgia Tech. They were like 11th. Oregon is playing Arizona. Arizona beat Oregon this year, and Arizona was like 7th. Alabama was playing Missouri. I think Missouri was 16th. Ohio State was playing Wisconsin. They were 13th. I mean, who are you playing at the final game of the season, TCU? You're playing Iowa State, you know? I mean, a community college could beat Iowa State. You know what I mean? Like, that's not doing anything for the committee. So I think that's kind of what ended up hurting them. There was no conference championship game in the Big 12, so therefore you don't really deserve to compete, because that last game is going to help you out. And then I resent the Big 12's commissioner, or whoever he was, that came out and said, well, it would have been nice to know if a conference championship game would help us in the ruling of the play. Knock it off. Seriously. You know what I mean? Like, seriously. I just don't understand how you can act like you can be that naive in a situation and act like you've never seen this before. Granted, the playoff system is new, but come on, you have to know that if you don't have a conference championship game, it's not going to help you. It's not going to hurt you that you don't have one, but it's not going to help you as it is those other conferences that have one. So, you know, I don't mind all the bickering over the teams and stuff. Like I said, I think they got the four teams right. My biggest beef, actually, is with the fact that Florida State is not still number one in the country. I don't know how the defending national champion can be undefeated and not be number one in the country. Think about that. Like, I get that this we're playing by new rules, and this is a new playoff system, and we're judging it off new metrics or whatever, supposedly. But, you know, I grew up in an era where Ric Flair told us that to beat a man, you gotta beat the man. Ric Flair said it. Whoa! My father says it. I don't know who said it first. They're both really old. I love you, Dad. But, you know, still, like, that's the truth. Like, you can't be on top if nobody knocked off the top dog. So, I don't give a damn if they win all their games by 1 point. Until further notice, Florida State is the number one team in college football, as far as I'm concerned. Especially with all the other external issues that's been surrounding that program, and they still pulled off an undefeated season for the second year in a row. Absolutely, they're the number one team in the country. So spare me with your Alabama stuff. And that's SEC bias for you. Some people believe that there's SEC bias. Some people believe now that it's gone so far that there's an anti-SEC bias. Here's what I do know. Florida State has not lost a game. And they dropped from first all the way down to fourth before nudging back up to third just this past weekend. And that's where they finished the regular season. Alabama, who already lost to Ole Miss this year, played Mississippi State at home in a game in which they were favored by like 10 points, or maybe even more than that. Mississippi State was number one team in the country, but it was in Tuscaloosa. And they played Mississippi State, beat them by 5 points at home, and they jump up from fifth to first. From fifth to first. That's ridiculous that they would jump up four spots like that. I mean, and Bama's good. Don't get me wrong, y'all. I'm not saying Bama's not good, but there is no way that you can convince me that it's fair for a team with one loss to jump up four spots because they beat another team that they play every year by 5 points at home. Like, that's not... It'd be one thing if they blew out Mississippi State or something like that. It'd be one thing if they, you know, beat them in Mississippi State, then that might count for a little bit more. But they beat them by 5 points at home. Like, I'm not buying that at all. So, but they move up five spots because they get the benefit of the doubt because they're Alabama. Well, if they're Alabama and we're going to base this off of Alabama's reputation and history of being a top program, which is, you know, fair enough. If you want to judge it that way, then so be it. Then how come it's wrong for us to factor in Florida State's undefeated streak that they have going on that dates back 2 years? That's the part that doesn't make any sense to me. Florida State has not lost a game since, what, 2012? Like, I mean, they have not lost. So to put them third and to not factor in Florida State's winning streak that includes a national championship last year, but yet we want to turn around and factor in Alabama's history of as a program and giving them the benefit of the doubt, I don't agree with that at all. And especially when you consider that Alabama beat Arkansas by just a point. They beat LSU. LSU gifted them that game down in Death Valley. That was a gift that they got from LSU. LSU should have beat them, but that game went into overtime and Bama won it. Bama looked like garbage against Auburn for the first 2.5 to 3 quarters of that game before they pulled away. Like, Bama has looked far from unbeatable. And frankly, they only got one dude on offense. And I like TJ Yeldon and everything. And Henry, he's straight, you know, whatever. Amari Cooper is the whole offense. So don't tell me that Alabama is head and shoulders above all these other teams. Frankly, I thought they should have been third behind Oregon because I thought Oregon had a better resume and Florida State because they're still the undefeated champs. Don't be shocked, y'all. I'm not making my predictions just yet. Do not be shocked if Ohio State upsets Alabama. I think it can happen. And then the same thing actually in the other matchup with Oregon and Florida State. Florida State, the defending national champions who've won a ridiculous 29 games in a row, is somehow the underdog against Oregon. Don't be shocked if Jameis Winston pulls that out. Why? Because Jameis Winston's never lost. So, whatever. And real quick, the Heisman finalists. It was Amari Cooper from Alabama, Marcus Mariota from Oregon, and Melvin Gordon from Wisconsin, running back. Those were the three Heisman finalists. So we got a quarterback, a receiver, and a running back. Amari Cooper's sensational. He, like I said, he's the only dude on the offense for Alabama, and he gets open every play. I don't understand how he does it. I've never seen a receiver more open than him in college, that in recent memory that I can think of. Melvin Gordon, phenomenal year, 2,200 yards, I believe, rushing, and a boatload of touchdowns. I don't even know how many. But Marcus Mariota is going to win. And I don't even think Marcus Mariota is so special of a player. I don't think he's as good of a college football player as Johnny Manziel was. And we're about to talk about Johnny Manziel. You best believe that. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think he's better than Manziel was. But everybody's drooling all over Mariota. And I think he's going to win the Heisman pretty easily. But I don't see anything special in him as a player just yet. But I just don't trust that program. I mean, Joey Harrington, A.J. Feely, the kid Thomas, whatever his name was, I forget his first name, and then who was there just last? I forget who Oregon's last quarterback was, y'all. It was somebody good too. I'm gonna kill myself if I don't remember. I'm gonna have to look it up. But anyway, you get the idea. I just don't trust. I just don't trust the system. Like, they produce a lot of quarterbacks who put up great numbers in college and then don't pan out in the NFL. Speaking of Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks in the NFL. It's Johnny time, y'all. Johnny! Browns haven't had a quarterback since Bernie, y'all. Bernie Kosar in the early 90s. That was the last legitimate quarterback the Browns have had. And so this has kind of been the issue that we've had. We've now had, I think, 20 starting quarterbacks, maybe 21 now with Johnny. And it was time for a change because we had lost 3 out of 4. Brian Hoyer had thrown, I believe, 8 picks and no touchdowns in his last 4 games. That's indefensible. The greatest Brian Hoyer supporters can't defend it. And not every play was Hoyer's fault. He had some drop passes. He had some mistakes made where guys didn't run the right routes, or, you know, look like guys may have quit on him and stuff like that. That happened. I understand that. But though, again, I've said this before, those things are, to a large degree, occupational hazards that kind of come with playing the quarterback position. Now, that's within reason, so don't get carried away with that statement, but, you know, every quarterback has receivers that drop passes now, from now and then. You know, you can drop passes here and there. You can run the wrong routes. You can miss a block assignment and give up a sack. That stuff happens. But sooner or later, the quarterback is going to get enough opportunities to where he can overcome those things if they happen. And when you have a 2-touchdown lead against a playoff team and you're in the midst of a playoff race yourself, like the Browns were on Sunday, you have to close the deal. And there's no two ways about it. You have to close that deal. And given the fact that Brian Hoyer, who had been yanked last week in Buffalo, was already on thin ice, the move to Johnny was inevitable. I heard Trent Dilfer the other day on SportsCenter last night. It was actually last night after Monday Night Football. And he was talking about Brian Hoyer and Johnny Manziel. Now, the audio might be very crude, y'all, so bear with me here. But I take this off my television for the podcast. I did this for you. I taped Trent Dilfer, his opinion on Brian Hoyer. Take a listen.
Sometimes a quarterback can do his job.
Yeah.
There's a job set out for him to do. He can do it. And it doesn't matter how well he does it. The narrative becomes anti that player. And if you look objectively at what Brian Hoyer did in the game, in the second half, 2 third downs, 1 third and 7, 1 third and 8, extending drives, perfect ball, does his job perfectly, ball's dropped, drives over. He looks bad, defense has to go back on the field. Gordon has a chance at the end of the game, ball's right here, to put him in field goal range, doesn't make the play. That's not Brian Hoyer's fault, but at this point, when people are going to become box score analysts and say, well, they haven't scored a touchdown this many drives, he has this many interceptions, whether it's his fault or not, one touchdown, I get it. The narrative becomes so loud as a head coach, as an organization, you probably have to make the move. I'll just say this, be careful what you ask for. Yeah. Sometimes you just get it. You might just get it. And it's going to be very interesting to see if this offense can function at all with the young quarterback.
All right. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. This is exactly why I can't stand Trent Dilfer. And I don't know Trent Dilfer personally, so this is not on a personal level. But as an analyst and as an observer of football, I can't stand Trent Dilfer's analysis because he says stuff like that. If you watch the game against the Colts on Sunday, Brian Hoyer, those things he mentioned were true. He did have, you know, some drops here and there, and there were some things like that. But there were also plays in which Brian Hoyer overthrew his receivers by 10 yards. And I'm talking about touchdowns. Like, Taylor Gabriel had one, I believe, in the first half. Josh Gordon had one, I believe, in the second half, where they beat their defenders, and they were all alone by themselves. And Brian Hoyer just missed them altogether. That stuff can't happen. You miss a throw here and there, that's fine. But, I mean, Hoyer missed a wide-open guy in Jacksonville in the end zone. Hoyer has even his deep balls that he's connected on. Brian Hoyer has connected on deep passes this year that were not good passes because they should have been walk-in touchdowns. If it's Aaron Rodgers, it's a walk-in touchdown. But Brian Hoyer would either leave it short or too long or something, and he wouldn't hit the receiver in stride. They would have to slow down, catch the ball, and then they would get tackled or they would fall out of bounds, something like that. That happened multiple times. Brian Hoyer, in addition to his horrible decision-making and interceptions and carelessness with the ball, he's also missing receivers, and he's just not putting any points on the board, and that's what he's paid to do. And again, I don't hate Brian Hoyer, but this notion that it's the narrative, and it's funny that he said that because a friend of the podcast, Anthony Houston, and I, we always talk about the narrative here, right? The narrative, how stuff just kind of gets out of hand and people just take one small idea and just run with it and it blows up and becomes this big thing that isn't necessarily based on truth. For Trent Dilfer to try to allude to the fact that that is the case with Brian Hoyer tells me that he has not been watching the Cleveland Browns. And that doesn't shock me because he dissed the Cleveland Browns and their fans back in the day when he stunk it up as a quarterback and then left town and then criticized the fans because he sucked. Okay? That's why I don't like Trent Dilfer personally. I mean personally as in my personal preference, not as in I have a problem with him personally because I don't know that man. But again, he just says ridiculous things like that. And so it's time. It's time for us to see what Johnny Manziel can do. I don't know if there's any truth to the rumors that Johnny hasn't been preparing well, or that the management and the team doesn't like, you know, him being out late and going to Cavs games. If they really had a beef with the Cavs games, that was, you know, shut up. If you really Mike Pettine, he goes to a Cavs game on his off day, and you and Ray Farmer or whoever else got a problem with it, Kyle Shanahan, get out of here. Just looking at the Browns offense, though, there's nothing that they're doing as an offense that makes me think that Johnny Manziel cannot excel, because the Browns offense, they were actually shielding Brian Hoyer all season, because even in Brian Hoyer's greatest games, the Browns were handing the ball off 50 times, literally. And if you look at the plays that the Browns run, they don't spread it out 4 or 5 wide, trips to the right, you know, and then they're running slant and goes and hitch routes and all these other stuff. Like, you know, 15 yard outs down the field, Brian Hoyer has to throw a frozen rope down the sideline. You don't see that stuff. Everything is basic. Play action, hit the fullback out in the flat. Play action, hit the tight end up the seam. Play action, hit a receiver on a deep post. Play action. Like, everything's a play action pass, and everything is, there's typically only one or two receivers that are even legitimate threats on those plays. Like, you have maybe one, or, you know, you have maybe 2 or 3 guys at the most. I mean, they're not complex routes or plays that they're running. Kyle Shanahan's been doing his best to shield Brian Hoyer from himself, from making these kinds of boneheaded decisions that he's been making of late, unfortunately. So Johnny can do the same thing. And in fact, the play action is going to work even better, because with Johnny being a mobile quarterback, it's going to force the defense to be honest with him in the backfield, because he's a threat. It's going to enhance the Browns' running game, and then it's going to make the play action more effective. Plus, as Johnny bootlegs out on these rollouts that Brian Hoyer used to always do, there's the threat of Johnny running, and I think Johnny has a stronger arm and is more accurate. So I don't know if his maturity level is going to be there yet. I'm not saying he's going to drag the Browns to the playoffs, but I do think Johnny Manziel should be the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns at this point. And I guess Mike Pettine does too. Hopefully it just ain't too late. Just like music.
No worries, peace to keep Murray. Just like music. To keep me flowing, to keep me going, to keep me growing, to keep me to eat from knowing what happens out there. It's not my concern. You wanna die, it's not my turn. Just like music. To do something to me like jumping a Mercedes on the highway, doing over 80 without music, baby.
Ow! I'll go crazy. Yeah. Just like music.
Make me call my homie on the phone like there's something new out that got me in the zone. Just that feeling got me. I wish music can adopt me.
Just like music.
My woman got me in the ear saying sweet nothings. Make love come out the mouth, no frontin', like all of a sudden.
Just like music.
Taking away your worries and cares. Any problems, music will be right there. Together match, yo, we a perfect pair. Is that true, Marvin?
Yeah, music.
Yo, to get you the bangness, body soul snatcher, universal language, it be the light. So open up, this is it, what the fuck?
Just like music.
One fly tune that had black and white vibe in one room. No confrontation, poly or night, it's just a sensation.
Just like music.
What did I say tonight's theme was, y'all? What did I say the theme was tonight? There was a common thread in all of these topics, right? We talked about college football, the argument between Ohio State, Baylor, TCU, etc. We talked about the Johnny Manziel, Brian Hoyer debate, people going back and forth about that. People very passionate in the city of Cleveland on one side or the other, by the way. And there's a lot of people that seem to hate Johnny for some reason, even though he's done nothing really all that wrong. conflict. People ain't getting along, y'all. I don't know what it is. I mean, people are just not seeing eye to eye right now. And speaking of conflict, in the world of hip hop, major news last week. This is a big deal. Lil Wayne took to Twitter and said that he's better to leave Cash Money or Young Money, whatever they want to call themselves. YMCMB, Young Money, Cash Money, Billionaire. He's out. And he didn't hesitate to throw Baby's name in it either. He said, no, Baby, a.k.a. Birdman, Brian Birdman, Baby Williams. Number one stunner himself, the five-star stunner. Have you ever seen the five-star stunner videos on YouTube? Go back and watch those from like 2009. They're hilarious. But it's just basically the man's guide to spending money in the most idiotic ways possible. It's the dumbest thing I've seen since I've seen Adrian Broner flush $20 down the toilet. That really happened too. But nah, Lil Wayne, I'm going to tell you what he tweeted directly because I have the tweets pulled up right here. This was a couple days ago. December 4th, to be exact. Weezy, who doesn't tweet all that often, comes out and says to all my fans, I want you to know that my album won't and hasn't been released because Baby and Cash Money Records refuse to release it. This is not my fault. I am truly and deeply sorry to all my fans, but most of all, to myself and my family for putting us in this situation. I want off this label and nothing to do with these people, but unfortunately, it ain't that easy. I am a prisoner, and so is my creativity. Again, I am truly sorry, and I don't blame you if you're fed up with the waiting for me and this album, but thank you. Pray. End tweet. Yeah, man. Wayne is, he's done with Cash Money, which is funny because in his, like, bio on Twitter, it still says, I'm Young Money. But, and it says youngmoney.com right there. But he tweeted that out to his 19.6 million Twitter followers last week. And it's crazy, man, because Baby and Wayne seemed inseparable. This is stunting like my daddy. This is, you know, Weezy and Birdman used to kiss each other on the mouth. You kiss another grown man on the mouth, y'all bonded for life. Y'all might as well be, I mean, y'all might as well live together like Felix and Oscar. Forever and ever. Like, there's just no turning back from that. They're like Lenny and Carl at that point. Like, you're just inseparable. You're joined at the hip. To sit here and see that Wayne and Birdman fell out, that frightens me, actually. It frightens me because it leaves me to feel like there's no hope for the rest of us. If those two guys fell out, I mean, who, and it sounds like business is what's gotten in the way. I mean, it doesn't sound personal. Wayne didn't say, he didn't make any personal attacks on Baby. He basically just said, I went off this label because they won't release my project. And it's got nothing to do with them personally. That's what it sounded like. But, you know, and if I'm Wayne, I get it because he really wants to get his music out there. And Wayne is interesting because he built his brand off being pretty much the hardest working man in hip hop. You wouldn't find a rapper putting out more music than Lil Wayne. Now you could argue that kind of dilutes his own product, and he's kind of like the anti Andre 3000 in that regard. But I think that grind and that effort and commitment is what led people to fall in love with Lil Wayne all over again, because he was hot when he first came out, then he kind of fell off a little bit. Maybe fell off isn't even the right word, but I mean, he just wasn't as prominent. He wasn't as top of mind in hip hop at a certain point. I'm talking right around the Lights Out, 500 Degrees, that time frame. And then he started doing the Squad Up thing. And then when he got back on those Squad Up mixtapes, and then when he linked with Drama and started dropping the Dedication mixtapes, then he came back out with the Kata? Yeah. I mean, Wayne earned everybody's respect. And he became, like I said, he became the hardest working man in music, period. I mean, go back and go to Lil Wayne's discography page on Wikipedia. You'll be astonished at how much music that guy's putting out. And maybe we should all give him a break at his rhymes being lackluster the last several years, because when you put out that much music, I'm sure you're going to run out of stuff to say. But, you know, but this is who Wayne is. This is what he's built his brand on. This is what he prides himself on. And I can imagine how frustrating it must be for him to not even be able to get his music out there. But It sounds like it's the politics of the game, and that's really sad. I don't know what Birdman's doing. Maybe Birdman has his reasons. Maybe he thinks Carter 5 is whack. Carter 4 didn't really get a ton of traction, I feel like. And, you know, I think his last album, technically, I think was I Am Not a Human Being 2, if I recall. I mean, Wayne has kind of... He's been shaky, to say the least, his last several projects. I don't think... You know, after the Carter 3, which I think 2008 was a massive success, critically overrated in my opinion, but still a good album. Since then, it's been I Am Not a Human Being, that rock and roll album, I Am Not a Human Being 2, a couple of weak No Ceilings or Dedication mixtapes, and now he's coming back with, and then Carter 4, and now Carter 5. It hasn't been great. He's seen better days. And so Wayne is like Kobe. You know, he's trying to get up his 37 shots a game or whatever, but now the coach isn't letting him shoot it. He's giving Kobe the, it's like if Kobe were coached by Dean Smith, and he's giving him the Dean Smith treatment. You know, he's trying to hold him down. It's kind of like that. And that's what Birdman is doing. Birdman is not allowing Wayne to get that music off. And so I can understand why that may be frustrating, but the conflict on Young Money, I never would have expected, because like I said, if Birdman and Wayne are the cornerstones of that, along with Slim, they built Young Money. So you talk about taking out one of the founding fathers, I don't know how much longer they're gonna last. It's just like when Jay and Dame split up, which was like 10 years ago. Rockefeller Records was never the same. Rockefeller Records can't sustain without Jay-Z and Damon Dash. It's gonna fall apart. I mean, Jay-Z was the most important figure in that, but Damon Dash was extremely instrumental in the success of Rockefeller Records, as was Biggs. And so together, the three of them, Kareem, Biggs, Burke, and Dame Dash and Jay-Z, they needed all those guys working and on the same page. Young Money's not going to sustain this. And I don't even know, what's the last, Young Money put out a compilation album, but they themselves, they're not putting out a ton of music anyway. And with the exception of Nicki Minaj. And Nicki has this album coming out, The Pink Print, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's due out on Monday. Next Monday, if I'm not mistaken. But or maybe it's due out... maybe it came out today. I don't know. The point is that it's due out very shortly. And this is not the kind of attention that she needs to be bringing, that needs to be brought to her label while she's trying to push this album forward. So I kind of feel for her on that one. Still, like I said, the Birdman... Wayne fallout, it's gonna reverberate throughout Young Money, and I think ultimately Wayne's gonna leave, and I think he's gonna start his own label, y'all. I think he's probably gonna go independent. He's one of the biggest rap stars of all time. He's got enough of a following to where he can do whatever he wants to do, and he's gonna take a following with him. And I think it speaks to a larger issue with these labels. Just not. Granted, you know, YMCMB is part of a larger company. I want to say Universal, but YMCMB is part of a larger parent company, but the point is that you don't need these giant parent companies to do your own thing. You can go the independent route and get paid handsomely for it, and you don't have to give up everything, and you don't have to give up every little thing as far as merchandise or whatever else. You don't got to get 360 or nothing like that. And I'm sure Wayne had a fair deal because he earned it, because he's been around for so long and he's been so successful. Nevertheless, he can do his own thing now and start his own label. He can call it, you know, Skateboard and Jeggings Records or something, or he can do something. He can. The point is, he can start up his own thing, and I think it'll be successful. And speaking of YMCMB and conflict, Drake got punched in the eye by Diddy. That happened, right? I guess they're out of the Miami nightclub. I think they're outside Live in Miami. Diddy punched him in the face. Allegedly, it was over Cassie at first. Like, Drake had said something about Cassie. But Drake ain't about to sit there and trash no other woman. Drake would rather talk to her while sipping on a glass of wine in front of the fireplace. Like, that's just how Drake rolls. He's not going to trash another woman like that publicly to the man's face like that. I don't think he would do that. I don't think he's got that in him. TMZ is reporting that it was actually over a song. It was over 0 to 100. Boy Wonder, the producer who produced the record, 0 to 100 and The Ketchup, one record, I guess Drake had been given that record or sold that record, as was Diddy. And Diddy had been sitting on it for like 8 months, according to TMZ. And Drake got pissed off because he's like, yo, man, I got this record. I want to do something with it, and it's going to be hot. And I'm being cordial to you, Diddy. I'm doing you a favor, but you're not moving on it. So I don't really know how exactly it came about or what happened, but Drake just put out the record. He put out the 0-1-100 record, and it became a hit. And there was no album with it. There was nothing. It was just a song that he put out, and it's been nominated for 2 Grammys. So it's worked out well. But Diddy felt disrespected, I guess, because Drake took the song and just flipped it and did his own thing with it. And my thing is this: Diddy, what were you gonna do with that record? Like, that's my take on it. Like, Diddy, you weren't about to do nothing with it. What's the last relevant single that Diddy made that you can think of? Honestly, like, the I'm Coming Home record, the Skylar Grey Diddy Dirty Money record that LeBron repopularized this year, but actually it came out like 4 years ago, that record. Like, I can't think of anything relevant that Diddy's done as far as like a single that was his song since that. And so I have no confidence that Diddy would have done anything good with it. As a matter of fact, that makes you wonder, like, I wonder how many songs, like, the producers let two artists get their hands on, and then these songs just died an ugly death because the one artist got it and the other artist didn't get to use it, and then the artist just did nothing with it. Like how Kanye West first got on the Blueprint, and he said that he was gonna give Heart of the City to DMX. That was on the Blueprint. Ain't no love in the heart of this, you know, that song. He was gonna give that beat to DMX, but Jay-Z said, nah, I gotta have that. And Jay-Z got it and turned it into a great song on what turned out to be a classic album. What if DMX had gotten that song? What was DMX gonna do with that? Yell all over it? Like, that might have been an awful song. Like, I don't know. And DMX was hot at the time, and DMX belongs in like the Rap Hall of Fame or whatever, but I'm just saying, like, I'm not knocking DMX, I'm just saying, on that kind of record, I don't know how that would have turned out. You know, like, I think what was it, Jadakiss got We Gonna Make It, but I think it was Razzcaz that got that also, the We Gonna Make It record. We gonna make it, right? Like, what would that record have been if Jada never got his hands on it? Like, that would have, what a wasted song that would have been. What a wasted song Hot Nigga was until Bobby Shmurda got his hands on it. You know, that was just, Lloyd Banks just had a record that, you know, it got a few YouTube hits, but nobody cared. Bobby Shmurda gets his hands on it, it's the biggest song of 2014. So it's just funny, man. It makes you think, like, I wonder how many songs out there that just sucked or just never reached their full potential because they just died in some rapper's studio because that rapper never should have got their hands on it to begin with. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. But yeah, man, so I guess a lot of dissension on YMCMB, and it's unfortunate, I guess. I mean, I'm not really a huge Young Money fan like that, but they got some talented artists over there between Wayne when he wants to, Nicki when she wants to, and Drake. So I don't know, it could be the end of an era. Money back and spend it on the same thing.
First things first, rest in peace, sucker Phil. For real. You the only father that I ever knew. I get my bitch pregnant, I'ma be a better you. Prophecies that I made way back in the veil. Fulfill. Listen, even back when we was broke, my team ill. Martin Luther King would've been on Dreamville. Talk to her, nigga. One time for my LA sisters. One time for my LA hoes. Lame niggas can't tell the difference. One time for a nigga who knows. Don't save her, she don't wanna be saved. 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 No role models and I'm here right now. No role models to speak of. Searching through my memory, I couldn't find one. Last night I was getting my feet rubbed by the baddest bitch. Not Trina, but I swear to God this bitch will make you call your girl up and tell her, hey, what's good? Sorry, I'm never coming home, I'ma stay for good. Then hang the phone up and proceed to lay the wood. I came fast like 911 in white neighborhoods. Ain't got no shame about it. She think I'm spoiled and I'm rich cause I can have any bitch. I got defensive and said, nah, I was the same without it. But then I thought back to a better me. Before I was a B-list celebrity, before I started calling bitches bitches so heavily. Back when you could get a platinum plat without no melody, you wasn't sweating me. One time for my LA sisters, one time for my LA hoes. Lame niggas can't tell the difference. One time for a nigga who knows.
Don't save her, she don't wanna be saved. Don't save her, she don't wanna be saved. Don't save her, she don't wanna be saved. Don't save her, she don't wanna be saved.
I want a real love, dark skin and Aunt Viv love. That Jada in that weird love. That leave a toothbrush at your crib, love. And you ain't gotta wonder whether that's your kid, love. Nigga, I don't want no bitch from reality shows. Out of touch with reality hoes. Out in Hollywood, bringing back five or six hoes. Fuck them, then we kick them to the door. Nigga, you know how it goes. She deserve that. She a bird, it's a bird trap. You think if I didn't rap, she would flirt back. Taking off a skirt, let her wear my shirt before she leave. I'ma need my shirt back.
Nigga, you know how it goes.
One time for my LA sisters. One time for my LA hoes. Lame niggas can't tell the difference. One time for a nigga who knows.
Don't save her, she don't wanna be saved. Don't save her, she don't wanna be saved. Don't save her, she don't wanna be saved. Don't save her, she don't wanna be saved.
There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, we can't get fooled again.
Fool me one time, shame on you.
Preseason podcast of the year. Yeah, man, figured we throw a little J. Cole at y'all, man. The new album is in stores and on iTunes, Forest Hill Drive, 2014 Forest Hill Drive. I've heard it. I think it's been a little while since I've done a Tale of the Tape, so that may be in order, but it may have to fall in line because I think there's a couple other albums that might precede that one. But yeah, I'll probably save my thoughts for a Tale of the Tape on that. But I did hear it, and I did hear it before it came out. What's funny is, I saw J. Cole online. I guess he at a show. He said something like, how many of y'all already got that 2014 Forest Hill Drive? And the crowd goes, woo! You know what I'm saying? And then he says, hey, security have all them arrested, man, because they ain't supposed to be pirating my shit, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just thinking, like, shut up, J. Cole. Like, you know, don't get me wrong. I feel where he's coming from. You know, I understand you put your hard work and money and time and energy into this project, and you're supposed to be selling it for consumption so you can make a living and all that type of stuff. I get all of that. And he feels like he's getting robbed of that. And a lot of artists have kind of made that claim over the years. But I personally, that whole thing always fell on deaf ears for me from musicians, particularly with rappers, because no other genre is so flagrantly irresponsible when it comes to money and are so, you know, hell-bent on making you feel like you have nothing and how they own the entire world. I kind of feel like, you know, if somebody steals your album offline for, you know, what would have been $10, so you would have gotten a nickel off of that record sale or whatever, and you didn't get it, and now you're sitting up here bitching about it on some MTV special or something like that, and now we have to sit through you complaining about that, or J. Cole's at a show and he's complaining about that after he's sitting up here making songs like, ah, Nice Watch, you know, like Mr. Nice Watch and all that kind of crap. Like, stop it. You know what I mean? Like, then don't rap about you being rich, and don't rap about you having the flyest car and having way more money than me and being in a higher tax bracket if you can't take some people stealing your records. You notice Jay-Z doesn't complain about people stealing his records, because Jay-Z makes moves. He's such a boss that he makes moves. He sells his records to Samsung. That's what he does. Like, that's a boss move. You know what I'm saying? If you step up your game a little bit and you reach a certain level of success, that stuff won't matter as much. But you rhyme about it as if you have it all already. And J. Cole's not the only one guilty of this. Every rapper raps about how much money they have. So I just get annoyed by that personally. I just don't buy it. But you know, the album, like I said, good album. We'll talk more about it later on, but just wanted y'all to get a little taste of that. I'm going to close out the podcast this evening, y'all, real quick with some thoughts on LeBron James, who wore an I Can't Breathe shirt. And it's actually not about LeBron James. I shouldn't really say that. It's a little bit about him, but it's about all the NBA players, really. Derrick Rose, I believe, was the first one to wear the I Can't Breathe shirt in reference to Eric Garner, who lost his life after a struggle with police that was caught on camera, as you probably know. You've probably seen it. He was heard saying, "I can't breathe." It was audible. You could hear it on the cell phone video. And police did not let up until they killed him, Radio Raheem style. And of course, there was no, I started to use the word conviction, but that would have inferred that there was a trial. There was no trial because the grand jury ruled that they could not prosecute any of the officers involved with this incident. And so LeBron and Derrick Rose, and I saw tonight the entire Los Angeles Lakers team, and Kyrie Irving and a few other players have worn these I Can't Breathe t-shirts in pregame warmups for the NBA. And they're actually catching a little bit of flack for it. People saying that, you know, I tune in to watch basketball games to get away from the real world. I don't want to be distracted by all these social issues. That was a common thing that I heard on radio the last couple days, specifically on Colin Cowherd's show. I actually heard that today. Or I think it was today, and they were saying, it was just guys calling up the show. I don't know where they get their calls from. It's a national show. They get all these listeners, and then they get like a 3 random calls an hour. I don't know where these guys call from, but I don't even know what the number is. But they called in a Cowherd, and they said stuff like, I don't want to be distracted by that while I'm watching a basketball game. That was a common thing that you would hear. My take on that is, actually, I think that's the perfect time to make some type of statement like that. Sports is a big deal in our society and in our culture, and athletes, we've seen athletes use sports as a mechanism to bring about social change. We saw it with Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the 1968 Olympics. We saw it with Muhammad Ali around that same time with regards to the Vietnam War. We saw it with Jackie Robinson in the 40s. I mean, these are men who took it upon themselves to use their platform for something greater than just playing the sport that they played. I think that's tremendously admirable. If I had that kind of platform, I would do the same thing. You know, and I would not hesitate twice to do it. But people still had a problem with LeBron for doing it. And like I said, I think that that game against the Brooklyn Nets specifically, which was last night, that was the perfect venue for LeBron to wear a shirt like that. And Kyrie, because they both did it. It was in New York City. Brooklyn, to be specific, which obviously New York City was the scene of the crime with Eric Gardner. So it was appropriate from a proximity standpoint. Also, it's in New York City, so just the fact that it's in New York, there's going to be more eyeballs, more people are going to be paying attention. Jay-Z and Beyonce were in attendance at the game, so that meant that there was more press. And then, of course, if you saw, Prince William and his wife Kate Middleton were also at the game, and that was their first NBA game. And so you had Prince Middleton. You had Prince William and Kate Middleton meeting Jay-Z and Beyonce on the court, shaking hands and whatnot. LeBron is there. I mean, that's a lot of star power. That's a lot of eyeballs. That's a lot of people paying attention. And when you have everybody's attention like that, what better time than to wear a shirt like that and to make that kind of a statement? I applaud LeBron James for doing what he did, and Kyrie Irving, because that, and anybody else that wore the shirt, because I think there were some guys on Brooklyn that did too. But the point is that that was the perfect venue to make a statement like that. Because you know what? A lot of people that call up, they had a problem with the fact that they were wearing that stuff during those games because they want to use sports to, quote unquote, get away. Well, this is something that we as black men cannot get away from. This issue with police brutality and the fact that no police officer that seems to ever commit these acts are ever brought to justice, ever. These are real issues that are facing our community. And so, as a black man, I appreciate LeBron doing what he did and Kyrie and those guys. These guys are using their platform to bring awareness to a real issue that affects people that look just like them. And that's them, their fathers, their brothers, their siblings, their friends, you know, their teammates, their sons. Like, they're all facing this issue. And so, you know, I mean, it was incredibly appropriate for them to wear it at that time. And the fact that some people saw that and got angry because they did not want to look at that, that made it all the more appropriate, because we need to bring about this issue in order for it to get changed. If people just keep their mouth shut, nothing's ever going to happen. If people aren't doing sit-ins or die-ins, as they call them rather now, you know, if people aren't laying down on the highway and stopping traffic, if people aren't protesting outside of these courthouses and these buildings, nothing's ever going to change. So yes, it takes a little bit of action, and yes, it's designed to make you uncomfortable, but damn it, that's what has to happen in order for something to get done about it. And so now they're talking about doing the body camera thing, and maybe they're exploring some other mechanisms to try to make police a little bit more accountable. But you know, I just get frustrated when I hear people say stuff like, you know, I wanted to get away. And it really just has to do with the fact that they don't agree with the cause itself. Because they don't agree with the cause, then all of a sudden LeBron's not allowed to voice his opinion in the circumstance. Same thing with the St. Louis Rams players that went out with their hands up in the whole Michael Brown, after the whole Michael Brown thing happened. Again, proximity was an issue. Again, the grand jury thing had just taken place, so timing was an issue. Again, you had Darren Wilson not being indicted for the death of Michael Brown, as he sat up on national television and portrayed Michael Brown to be the Incredible Hulk. You know, these things were going on in St. Louis, and those players took a stand, and they used their platform to take a stand. These guys aren't going to be famous forever. We don't know what LeBron's going to do after he retires. And those Rams players, you know, Tavon Austin and Jared Cook, when are those guys going to have a platform again? They took it upon themselves to put their fame and celebrity to use for something positive. And I, like I said, I applaud them just as much as I applaud all the NBA players for doing the same thing. And if it makes you uncomfortable, good, because it should make you uncomfortable. And it should get you to stop and think that, you know what, maybe if all these black men are taking this seriously, maybe it's a real issue. You know what, if you're not a black male in this country and you fail to see what the problem is, or you believe that these guys all brought this stuff upon themselves as if robbing a convenience store, which actually had nothing to do with the Darren Wilson altercation, or with selling illegal cigarettes, as if those acts warrant murder, and you can justify these homicides by the fact that they were involved in these petty crimes. If you want to look at it that way, then maybe you should take a step back and look at the fact that there's all these men who are going out of their way to show you, like, no, this is a real issue. I've been harassed and profiled by the police many times. Thankfully, I haven't been murdered yet. So, like I said, man, it's real out here. And so, rest in peace to Eric Garner and Michael Brown, and prayers out to their families, and shout out to all of the professional athletes and entertainers, and anybody for that matter, who is doing their best to spread the word about this issue, because it is a real issue. It's not made up. It's not an invention of the media. It's not something that should be compared to black civilians killing white civilians as if it's the same thing. No, because we're talking about police officers who are called to a higher standard because their job is to serve and protect the people. It sucks, man. It sucks. It does. It's a real issue. And so I tend to end the podcast from time to time, I feel like, on some heavier stuff like this. But these things are not a fabrication. If this many people are getting that upset about it, maybe people who don't think that there's something going on here should take a step back and say, you know what, maybe there is. Maybe I got to check myself, because if this many people are up in arms about it, and I've never experienced it myself, maybe it's a real issue. Thank you for listening, y'all. Hip Hop Sports Support Podcast. Holler at us on Twitter. Let us know your thoughts. Anything I just said about the Michael Brown, Darren Wilson situation, also check out our article on Charles Barkley. I kind of come to Sir Charles's defense there, not so much for what he said, but for who he is. And there's a big distinction there that needs to be understood when reading that article. Barkley's always been fair. You might not agree with his definition of fair, but he always tries to call it right down the middle. And he's been that way forever. And anybody who thinks that his recent comments make him an Uncle Tom, they've never followed Charles Barkley's life and career. So that's kind of the idea there. But go ahead, check out that on hiphopsportsreport.com. Hit us on Twitter at HHSReport, facebook.com/HHSReport. And please like and subscribe to the podcast. If you see this link somewhere, do me a favor, retweet it, share it with a friend. You know, tell somebody else about it, put somebody else onto it, tell us what we're doing, tell somebody about what we're trying to do here. And like I said, we're trying to move towards something important. It's almost 2015, y'all, and we're trying to make this thing bigger. So thank you for everybody who supported the podcast at this point as we cross the 1-year anniversary threshold. And so we'll have to catch up with y'all a little bit later on. Obviously, there's some big NBA games this week, big NFL games this week. J. Cole's album is out. Nicki's album is dropping. What a time to be alive. Jay Hicks, I'll holler at y'all. Peace.